Mini episode 617 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome, everyone, to mini episode 617 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris. We have a very special conversation coming up for you today. It's always tough to come up with something to follow on the heels of our most recent appearance last week with Bob Barker. You always hope that the next thing that you do is going to be as impactful as that. You never know. It's a luck of the draw kind of a thing. Maybe it takes a little while before you have somebody else with a lot of impact coming on the show. But lo and behold, the very next week, here we are. We are very happy to welcome back to the show a gentleman that we have had on previously from the worldwide leader, Robert Flores. Of course, you can catch him on SportsCenter. You can catch him on the Fantasy Football Show on Sunday mornings. We will be talking with him fantasy football today, certainly. A very tumultuous week in college football. We'll be getting into that with him, as well as the world of what our own Kyle Ross at this show likes to call the greatest sport of them all, the pro graps. Certainly that is in the headlines this week as ESPN and the WWE have some synergy coming their way. So we'll be talking about that with him as well and what he sees coming out of that. Again, all that and much, much more with a gentleman that we are very privileged to have back on the show. As I said, Robert Flores of ESPN. Robert, it's a privilege to have you back on the show again. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing fine. Thank you. I'm not sure as I'm as impactful as Bob Barker, but I'll do my best. That dude's a legend right there. That's hard to follow right there, that's for sure.
It is. But you know what? Again, I can think of nothing better than to do another one of these segments with you. Really enjoyed it in the past. And there's certainly an awful lot going on right now, a lot that you can speak of. Let's start with some of the headlines coming out of the world of college football. I don't think we ever thought we'd see the day where both USC head coaching jobs come open in a day. By choice, one certainly not by choice. Steve Sarkisian, with what appears to be from media reports out there related to substance abuse issues, he's out of the job at Southern Cal. Steve Spurrier, the old ball coach, hangs it up at South Carolina. Again, two bombshells in a very close period of time. What are your thoughts on those? Let's start there.
Well, first of all, the USC situation, the Southern Cal situation, is just it's really sad. I mean, anytime someone is dealing with something as serious as it appears to be or has been reported to be, then Sark is dealing with a disease. He has a disease, if the reports are to be believed. And you would just hope that he gets himself healthy and gets himself right. The other facet of this that I think is sad is his coaching staff. Granted, Clay Helton is the interim head coach, but there's going to be a new head coach, and more than likely it won't be Clay Helton, which means all of Sark's assistants are – left looking for new jobs. And many of these coaches have families, they have kids, but that's what they signed up for. And then lastly, it's the athletes, the players that came to Southern Cal to play for Coach Sark. If you're playing at a program like Southern Cal, then you had your choice more than likely to play at other high-profile programs. And it's just unfortunate that these players aren't going to be able to finish out their career with the coach that they decided to follow.
Absolutely. There's a lot of victims in the situation. And something that I'm kind of wondering a little bit at this point, given that the initial discipline/slash procedure for dealing with this on the part of USC was just to put him on leave and then a day later to say, you know what, don't bother coming back. I'm kind of wondering at this point, is there likely to be any kind of steam or backlash coming their way? Because as you said, This is a disease we're talking about. You know, I've got a grandfather who was in AA who I respect greatly for having battled back. And, you know, there's an awful lot of things about this that it kind of makes me squirm a little bit, the fact that he was put out on the street altogether. Do you suspect that that may become more of a growing backlash in terms of how they handled it?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, that's tough for me to speculate on because there's so many. Look, there's going to be legal issues involved, and I'm sure that there will be lawyers if there's not already involved. I'm sure that they have spoken with his representation. But yeah, it's a multi-layered situation because there are, as I said, I mean, there's substance abuse. It's definitely a horrible, horrible thing. And I'm sure we all know someone either related to us or we know personally that has battled these sort of demons. So yeah, I was surprised to hear the how and why things change. But I'm sure at some point it will all come out. I mean, the most important thing is it's not wins or losses. It's that Coach Sark gets himself healthy and gets himself right. That is the most important thing. It's not wins and losses, but I'm sure all of that stuff will get decided and hammered out in good time.
Very well said. I agree with that, and I think, again, the foremost thing is that hopefully he can come out of this okay and recover well, and have to see what happens at USC with what has become a very, very messy latest chapter in a pretty bad almost decade period of time since the glory days of Pete Carroll over there. And you look at another program that appeared to be on its way back very quickly this season, University of Florida, going very well and undefeated at this point. Now to find out they lose their starting quarterback the rest of the year and into next year on an issue for a banned substance in there. That, again, and there's the usual thing of, oh, it was in an over-the-counter thing that I was taking, didn't quite realize it. So a little bit of being contested in that sense there. But what are your thoughts about that? That seems to me that would have been one of the biggest stories in America probably any other day, and it gets relegated to number three because of the two coaches leaving yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, it's another unfortunate situation. And the thing is, this suspension for Greer isn't the rest of the season. It's a full year. So here we sit already mid-year. So he's going to miss half of next year as well. You know, I don't know, pretend to know the inner workings of Florida's strength and conditioning program. I'm sure they have very capable individuals. But you know, this is a young kid, and there are certain restrictions as to what and when he's allowed to be around coaches and things like that. So I give him a little bit of slack on maybe being a little somewhat ignorant of the rules. But at the same time, he is an adult. He should know the rules. But I just think it's a shame that he's going to miss, as I said, the rest of this year and then half of next year. That's a double whammy, not only for the program, but for more importantly for him.
Absolutely. And very transformational when you were looking at that team very likely at this point coming out of the SEC East and probably posing a very good threat in the championship game. And now what does that do to the entire landscape of the conference? It just, it's an unbelievable sort of multiplier effect from the one suspension. So that's going to be certainly worth watching the rest of the way too. In fantasy sports, which again, I know you're covering every Sunday morning on ESPN2. What are your general thoughts thus far this season as far as, are there any macro level issues that you see out of the first quarter plus of the season that are kind of impacting and changing the landscape a little bit? I've been kind of wondering personally with Todd Gurley's emergence over the course of the last couple of weeks here, if this might not be the leading edge, if you look at the medium term, maybe of sort of the return of the bell cow to the league. When you look at Zeke Elliott, Leonard Fournette coming up the next couple of years, what Lynch has done the last couple of years, it's a copycat league. But of course, something like that's predicated on the talent supply to be able to do something like that. So, starting there, do you get any kind of a sense that we may be seeing a resurgence of the bell cow in the league?
Well, I think what's interesting is that you know, right now in ESPN.com standard scoring leagues, Devontae Freeman is the second highest scorer in the in fantasy football, and number one is Andy Dalton. So I think when you're talking strategy and things like that in fantasy football, while there aren't as many of those dominant running backs like there used to be, if you can land one, and Devontae Freeman right now is one and certainly wasn't drafted highly, I would suspect that if Devontae Freeman is on your team, then you've won a lot of games, that you're either at the top of your league or near it. So it's important to, you know, quarterback and receivers, they still put up a ton of points, but if you can land that running back, that because there's just so few out there, then that puts you at such a big advantage over the rest of your opponents.
To reinforce what you just said there, that specific example, I can tell you, I've got a team where I've got him, and it's a team that's doing quite well. And again, it shows what any of us knew at the beginning of the season here. I got him as my Tevin Coleman handcuff, and he's proved to be much more than that. But week two, I lost because, and I think a lot of people probably would have done the same thing, I played T.J. Yeldon over him. So I'll bet that's probably a horror story that you've probably heard time and time again as people who missed his first breakout week.
Yeah, I mean, I have similar situations where you, you know, and on the flip side, C.J. Anderson is a guy that I have in a league, and he's just been, I'm just trying to unload him for anything. I mean, I'm looking for a tight end if I can get it. But, I mean, just because if not, then I'm going to cut him. And he was my 52nd or 3rd round pick. But it just shows you that the running back position, there's not a lot of depth there. And if you can land one that gets on a hot streak, and Devontae Freeman is definitely on a hot streak, then it really puts you ahead of the game.
Absolutely. You know, but with what you're saying about C.J. Anderson, this is one of the fascinating things about fantasy football relative to other sports. And again, with our FantasyDraftHealth.com site, last week as one of our five recommended more marginal plays for the week, we had DeMarco Murray on the list in the sense of regression to the mean coming and just kind of had the sense that it might be a good time to play him against all evidence so far this season. So where do you come down on something like that? Because it's not baseball, hoops, or hockey, where you've got the long seasons. You can kind of sit through somebody having a bad month of July and plug in your hitter in August. But for something like this with a C.J. Anderson, how long of a leash do you give him? Or are you really that hot to dump him right now?
Yeah, I think it's time, especially when you – I mean, if you can get something for him in a trade, as I said, I'm trying to get a tight end – maybe a wide receiver three, but it's not like he's going to turn it around. And plus, Gary Kubiak has said that it's definitely going to be a timeshare between him, Anderson, and Hillman. So I think I would be stunned if C.J. Anderson turned things around. And to make matters, to complicate matters, the Denver's offense right now isn't any good. Peyton Manning isn't what he once was. The offensive line has been constantly shuffled, so that just all sorts of goes into what has been a disappointing season individually for C.J. Anderson.
Absolutely. He's had a very difficult time of it. I want to ask you in a general sense here, and I'm going to stray away from anything really controversial as regards any of the media companies involved, because I don't want to put you in a bad spot with talking about this, but daily fantasy football, which again this year obviously has blown up like never before, it was really kind of interesting to me in the last couple of weeks with people's perception of it kind of sharpening. Your colleague Scott Van Pelt giving the editorial that I thought was very much on point about the similarity of gambling, almost the identical situation with gambling and daily fantasy vis-a-vis gambling and traditional fantasy. I've always kind of likened them to first cousins, so to speak here. But the way that we're kind of perceiving this right now, what's been your kind of sense just, you know, from a 50,000-foot view in terms of how people are looking at the industry right now?
Well, it's the most popular – I mean, there's a reason that the NFL is the most popular sport in America. I mean, one, because
we love football, but two, it's fantasy football. I mean, that's a big part of why the NFL is so popular. And daily fantasy is just an extension of that. As far as all the other implications of whether or not it should be legal or regulated, that's way above my pay grade, and I'm definitely not smart enough to figure it out. But, you know, I think that, as I said, I mean, there's a reason the NFL let me put it this way. There's a reason why if you're, say, your favorite team like mine is the Houston Texans, there's a reason I was glued to my TV last night watching the Chargers and the Steelers. It's because I had Le'Veon Bell in a couple of fantasy leagues. And I always played him in a daily league. So, I mean, you can put two and two together as far as the popularity and why it is so popular. But as far as, you know, who knows what and when, how to regulate it, like I said, I'm definitely not smart enough to figure that out.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You've already had one congressman who sort of poked into it a little bit at this point and kind of gotten on his soapbox about greater regulation. And I get the sense in general that it's probably going to come under more scrutiny as we go along here. But it's just been really fascinating to kind of watch and to see the notion of this particular offshoot of it. Because essentially, there have been variations of, like this that have been around for a long time. But as far as the similarity to gambling, I find this kind of instructive. I was in Vegas, I think I want to say around 04, and at that time, as far back as then, you could find the parlay cards at the sports books where you could check off, you know, what players you wanted and essentially compile your daily fantasy team. So in one way or another, it's sort of been around for a long time. We just haven't necessarily referred to it with this verbiage. But as far as the feedback that you're getting with the show and questions that are coming into you guys, how much of it is relating to people at this point with their daily teams versus their season-long teams? I wonder to what extent it's cutting into the interest of season-long teams.
I think it's pretty much 50-50. I mean, I think that there's a lot of I don't want to say 50-50. I still think the most dominant form of fantasy football is the people that play in leagues, online leagues. But when your league is out of it and you have no hope, hey, let's see what the daily leagues are all about. So that's why, you know, we talk daily values in our show, and both on Sunday morning and Tuesday afternoon. So I think it's just kind of just augmenting what is already just an extremely popular form of gaming.
Absolutely. You got to give the people what they want, and if that's what they're after, then it makes sense to talk about it. I have a theory, generally speaking. This was floated to me by one of our show contributors, Nate Noy. I wonder what you think about it. The notion of people who have been entering leagues all these years, just getting in leagues with strangers on different websites, not leagues with their friends, but essentially just so that they have an outlet to be able to play fantasy football. It's his sense that's probably going to be starting to die off in favor of the immediate gratification of the weekly leagues, that essentially if you don't have any emotional tie to the people in your league, that you may abandon that for the more immediate gratification of that. Do you have any sense that may be a trend over the next couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's both, though. I think that people that play fantasy football play with their friends or coworkers, and then they also – I really would be interested in meeting the person. Now I'm sure that there are some that play strictly, that's daily, that's all they do, because there's some that, I mean, they are heavily, heavily involved. They're using algorithms and formulas and things like that. So, it's definitely, it's almost at that point become a job.
Right.
But I think that there's, it's almost two separate players. It's or two and a half, really. You got the person that likes the league with their coworkers and friends, and then you also, that same person, maybe they'll dabble here and there in the daily league. So, But, you know, it's still relatively new, kind of a new form of fantasy football and fantasy sports. So there's still a lot of things that kind of need to be, I'm sure, flushed out and how people consume it and play it.
Well, you know, and for you to mention the algorithms there, what's very interesting to me is that again, puts it in the league, I think, of the professional gamblers out there, the high-stakes people who devote their lives to that. That is their job. And I have noted for a long time, in my estimation, that there's not a lot of difference between them and some of the folks doing the high-speed computerized trading on Wall Street, and the people trying to get in, make an edge with these programs. And it almost seems like what's happening with Daily Fantasy right now is pointing out that link to Wall Street almost more than ever, because, you know, it seems like you're using programs that you could be using to a certain extent on Wall Street to try to get immediate edges on things. You're maybe tweaking it a little bit, and you're getting the most advantageous lineups with Daily Fantasy. So it almost seems like it's the same sort of skill set among a lot of these people.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely you can really get high tech and sort of heavily involved in it. I mean, I would say that most of the people that do it, I mean, I don't have any data to back it up, but I would suspect most of it, you know, there's just regular guys like, or gals like you and I, and they, you know, kind of play it and see if they can win. And but you always have some that are extremely professional and scientific and try to get as deep into it as possible.
I think you're exactly right about that. If you're looking at the raw numbers of people who play it, I think that you know, the sharks with the algorithms and all that kind of stuff and the high bankrolls behind them are probably a tiny, tiny percentage of the number of people playing it. I think that's exactly right. But something else that I wanted to ask you about, you of all people at ESPN to ask about this with your great interest in the world of pro graphs, this evolving relationship now with WWE, which I am given to understand is going to involve a lot of coverage of WrestleMania 32 next year, which should be the biggest one of them all, at least in terms of raw attendance, maybe in terms of money, et cetera. Again, as you look at it from this point out, it would seem like a natural for them to have you on this to a pretty good degree. Do you have a sense at this early point in time how much you might be involved with that?
I have no idea. I'm usually the last person to find out. You know, it might be public before I find out. But you know, I do think that it's a good it's a chance for. Because both brands are well known, they have a lot of equity, and you know, both brands they're fighting for similar audiences. You know, WWE may skew a little younger, but you know, when you get 93,000 people, which, you know, or 93,000 plus, which is what they're hoping to get in Arlington and at WrestleMania, you know, the event is scripted and predetermined, but these guys are still athletes, and there is some storytelling involved. So I think it's a natural. I think are we going to be showing Raw and SmackDown and Impact highlights on a weekly or nightly basis? No. But whenever there's a big event and you get some crossover stars in there at the event, like WrestleMania will usually bring out, like they had Ronda Rousey last year, in Santa Clara. So yeah, I think it makes perfect sense. So you know, hopefully that'll continue, and we'll see what happens down the road.
But as of now, no chance of seeing a really sweet red arrow in the top 10 on a given night.
I hope so. I would love for that. Now that would be definitely fun to have there in the top 10. But you know, like I said, whenever there's big time events and you can kind of be a part of it and just showcase your brand to, as you know, a whole bunch of people gathering in one place, I think it helps, and it also helps WWE as well.
Well, in terms of you know, a little bit of irony here, WWE participating at all with ESPN, with WrestleMania 32, a little bit of a coincidence with the metro area of Dallas there in terms of a previous product shown on ESPN. I have been unfortunate enough to catch on a couple of occasions on ESPN Classic, some of the global circa about 93. I don't know if you ever subjected yourself to that.
But, I watch it every now and then.
How did that ever make it on national TV, Robert? I see that, and I'm just going low-level indie. Ugh.
It was a different time, man. That definitely was a different time. I mean, television has changed a lot, and also professional wrestling has changed a lot. But it is kind of a nice little snapshot of the past and how far the two brands and the two kind of ESPN and pro wrestling and how far that they've come. But yeah, it's definitely, I get a kick out of checking out those. You'll see every now and then, depending on, you know, as you said, it's on ESPN Classic. Every now and then you'll see a young Eric Bischoff working for the AWA, you know, because we show some old AWA highlights and like that. So you'll see some familiar faces every now and then, depends on if you catch it on the right night.
Absolutely, yeah. You got to make sure it's the right episode that's on, and you're right about that. And AWA having been one of the things that was on, maybe even an old Cactus Jack, depending on when. I think they did a little bit with USWA, so there could be a little bit of that in there as well. And again, something else in the world of graphs, I have to ask you about. You actually, based on our previous discussions on the show about Houston wrestling, you're the first person I thought of when I heard this. The news over the past summer about that Houston wrestling catalog getting put out there, NWAClassics.com, carrying all the stuff on a streaming basis. I guess they're supposed to be adding more and more of that as time goes along. So you're obviously a very busy guy, so I know that would probably be the one impediment to getting it and enjoying it, but I'm curious, have you cracked into that thing yet?
Even before that website, I've checked out some old matches on YouTube, so you can find pretty much everything on YouTube. But I'm glad that there is a home for that, because it's a great library of stuff. I think there was some legal things that had to be worked out as far as ownership and who owned that library, that content that was run by Paul Bosch and Houston Wrestling all those years ago. So I'm not sure if those have been figured out, but it's good that there is a place for it, that they've found a home for it, and if people can benefit from it and still make some money on it, I think that's outstanding, because it's good. It's definitely a good product, and as I said, it was a different time back then, but I know it's something that people still enjoy.
Absolutely, and it's something that people who are just getting into the biz today can really leverage and go through. And based on what I hear through the grapevine about NXT, that's the kind of stuff that does kind of get leveraged to teach the next generation some timeless things about getting over with the crowd and doing different aspects of it. But I got to admit, you know, the wrestling nerd in me is kind of amused by this, that it's NWAClassics.com that got that, because I think back in a previous appearance on the show we had with Larry Matisic, where we were talking about St. Louis wrestling, you know, St. Louis and Houston, the two unaffiliated cities, really. I mean, St. Louis, okay, they were part of the NWA, but they weren't really their own territory. Houston was independent in just about every way you could think of. I know Nick Bockwinkel was making a ton of appearances down there, and for a guy like me, Nick Bockwinkel would probably be worth the price of NWA Classics alone, but it is kind of ironic, is it not, that it ends up being Houston that gets associated with this, as opposed to Atlanta, Greensboro, or any of the places we would consider classic NWA?
Well, yeah, I think that what made Houston such a great territory, as you said, was Nick Bockwinkel would come in for a series of matches, and then you would have Ric Flair come in for a series of matches. So there was, I think if you had to choose one, I think Houston Wrestling would lean towards the NWA, but there was always plenty of AWA stars that would come in for dates and things like that. But yeah, that's one of the great things about Houston Wrestling. You would get to see stars from all over, and it made it feel like it was a global brand, even though it was just
essentially a large local territory.
Absolutely, and so much great stuff that they had, and the stuff that I've seen of theirs online previous to this has been sort of more of a later sort of Mid-South slash UWF years,
mm-hmm.
but obviously, yeah, as we've discussed previously, it kind of goes way back beyond that, and it's really, really been interesting. I have to say, too, it's funny, if you look on some of the message boards where some of the tape traders and historian types are on there, you know, reading some of the observations of people that have gone through this kind of stuff, it's really interesting that somebody like Gino Hernandez, you know, we think of him as, you know, getting, you know, cut, you know, down before his prime. And what's interesting is, you know, I guess if you look at the Houston Tape Library, I mean, it's still a tragedy that he died young, but he had more of a prime than anybody really kind of realized if you go back and you look at the late 70s, early 80s stuff.
Yeah, he turned heel in Houston, and that's where mm-hmm. he kind of cut his teeth as a heel, and he was, I mean, he was one of the great sort of heels of the early 80s, and but he got his start in Houston, and so I just another tragic sort of ending, and just a guy that died way too soon. But yeah, he was someone that was special, and you're right, he got it started in Houston.
Yeah, it's a great chance to see guys like him and a lot of other of his contemporaries being featured on there. So I look forward at some point to checking this out. But yeah, it has to be a very great streaming service, I'm sure. But as always, Robert, I have to say we are appreciative of your time here in the FDH Lounge. It is a pleasure to be able to catch up with you and get your takes on various subjects. Look forward to doing it again. And once again, thank you so much and all the best to you.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Excellent. It's our honor, Robert, truly. Thank you very much for being on. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. The FDH Lounge mini episode number 617.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.